stories from the worlds of speculative fiction. Second in command on a Hyper A class spacer in the war against the second extragalactic invaders, the ones who established bases on Jupiter's moons before we knew they were there and almost drove us out of the solar system before we found the one weapon they couldn't stand up against. So they fled where we couldn't follow them, outside of the galaxy. When we did follow them, about 15,000 years later, they were gone. They were dead 3,000 years. And this is what I want to tell you about, that mighty race and the others. But first, so that you will know how I know what I know, I will tell you about myself. I am not immortal. There is only one immortal being in the universe. A bit more later. Compared to it, I am of no importance. But you will not understand or believe what I say to you unless you understand what I am. There is little in a name, and that is a fortunate thing, for I do not remember mine. That's less strange than you think, for 180,000 years is a long time. And for one reason or another, I have changed my name 1,000 times or more. And what could matter less than the name my parents gave me 180,000 years ago? I am not a mutant. What happened to me happened when I was 23 years old, during the first atomic war. The first war, that is, in which both sides used atomic weapons. Puny weapons, of course, compared to subsequent ones. It was less than a score of years after the discovery of the atom bomb. The first bombs were dropped in a minor war while I was still a child. They ended that war quickly, for only one side had them. The first atomic war wasn't a bad one. The first one never is. I was lucky, for if it had been a bad one which ended a civilization, I'd not have survived it. Despite the biological accident that happened to me. If it had ended a civilization, I wouldn't have been kept alive during the 16-year sleep period I went through about 30 years later. But again, I get ahead of the story. I was, I believe, 20 or 21 years old when the war started. They didn't take me for the Army right away because I was not physically fit. I was suffering from a rather rare disease of the pituitary gland, somebody syndrome, I've forgotten the name. It caused obesity, among other things. I was about 50 pounds overweight for my height and had little stamina. I was rejected without a second thought. About 2 years later, my disease had progressed slightly, but other things had progressed more than slightly. By that time, the army was taking anyone. It had taken a one-legged, one-armed blind man if he was willing to fight. And I was willing to fight. I'd lost my family in the dusting. I hated my job in a war plant. I'd been told by doctors that my disease was incurable and that I had only a year or two to live in any case. So I went to what was left of the army. And what was left of the army took me without a second thought and sent me to the nearest front, which was 10 miles away. I was in the fighting one day after I joined. Now, I remember enough to know that I hadn't anything to do with it, but it happened that the time I joined was the turn of the tide. The other side was out of bombs and dust and getting low on shells and bullets. We were out of bombs and dust, too, but they hadn't knocked out all our production facilities, and we'd got just about all of theirs. We still had planes to carry them, too. And we still had the semblance of an organization to send the planes to the right places. Nearly the right places, anyway. Sometimes we dropped them too close to our own troops by mistake. It was a week after I got into the fighting that I got out of it again. Knocked out of it by one of our smaller bombs that had been dropped about a mile away. I came to about 2 weeks later in a base hospital, pretty badly burned. By that time, the war was over, except for the mopping up and except for restoring order and getting the world started up again. You see, that hadn't been what I call a blow-up war. It killed off, well, I'm just guessing, I don't remember the fraction, it killed off about a fourth or a fifth of the world's population. There was enough productive capacity left. There were enough people left to keep on going. There were dark ages for a few centuries. But there was no return to savagery, no starting over again. In such times, people go back to using candles for light and burning wood for fuel, but not because they don't know how to use electricity or mine coal, just because the confusions and revolutions keep them off balance for a while. The knowledge is there in abeyance until order returns. It's not like a blow-up war when 9/10 or more of the population of Earth or of Earth and the other planets is killed. Then is when the world reverts to utter savagery. And the 100th generation rediscovers metals to tip their spears. But again, I digress. After I recovered consciousness in the hospital, I was in pain for a long time. There were, by then, no more anesthetics. I had deep radiation burns from which I suffered almost intolerably for the first few months. Until gradually they healed. I did not sleep. That was the strange thing. And it was a terrifying thing then, for I did not understand what had happened to me. And the unknown is always terrifying. The doctors paid little heed, for I was one of millions burned or otherwise injured, and I think they did not believe my statements that I had not slept at all. They thought I had slept but little, and that I was either exaggerating or making an honest error. But I had not slept at all. I did not sleep until long after I left the hospital, cured. Cured, incidentally, of the disease of my pituitary gland, and with my weight back to normal, my health perfect. I did not sleep for 30 years. Then I did sleep, and I slept for 16 years. And at the end of that 46-year period, I was still physically at the apparent age of 23. Do you begin to see what had happened as I began to see it then? The radiation, or combination of types of radiation I had gone through, had radically changed the functions of my pituitary. And there were other factors involved. I studied endocrinology once, about 150,000 years ago, and I think I found the pattern. If my calculations were correct, what happened to me was one chance in a great many billions. The factors of decay and aging were not eliminated, of course, but the rate was reduced by about 15,000 times. I age at the rate of one day every 45 years. So I am not immortal. I have aged 11 years in the past 180 millennia. My physical age is now 34. And 45 years is to me as a day. I do not sleep for about 30 years of it. Then I sleep for about 15. It is well for me that my first few days were not spent in a period of complete social disorganization or savagery, else I would not have survived my first few sleeps. But I did survive them, and by that time I had learned a system and could take care of my own survival. Since then I have slept about 4,000 times, and I have survived. Perhaps someday I shall be unlucky. Perhaps someday, despite certain safeguards, someone will discover and will break into the cave or vault into which I seal myself secretly for a period of sleep. But it is not likely. I have years in which to prepare each of those places and the experience of 4,000 sleeps back of me. You could pass such a place 1,000 times and never know it was there, nor be able to enter, even if you suspected. No, my chances for survival between my periods of waking life are much better than my chances of survival during my conscious active periods. It is perhaps a miracle that I have survived so many of those, despite the techniques of survival that I have developed. And those techniques are good. I've lived through 7 major atomic and superatomic wars that have reduced the population of Earth to a few savages around a few campfires in a few still habitable areas. And at other times, in other eras, I've been in 5 galaxies besides our own. I have had several thousand wives, but always one at a time, for I was born in a monogamous era, and the habit has persisted, and I have raised several thousand children. Of course, I have never been able to remain with one wife longer than 30 years before I must disappear. But 30 years is long enough for both of us, especially when she ages at a normal rate and I age imperceptibly. Oh, it leads to problems, of course, but I've been able to handle them. I always marry when I do marry. A girl as much younger than myself as possible, so the disparity will not become too great. Say I am 30. I marry a girl of 16. Then, when it is time that I must leave her, she is 46, and I am still 30. And it is best for both of us, for everyone, that when I awaken, I do not again go back to that place. If she still lives, she will be past 60. And it would not be well, even for her, to have a husband come back from the dead still young. And I have left her well provided, a wealthy widow, wealthy in money or in whatever may have constituted wealth in that particular era. Sometimes it has been beads and arrowheads, sometimes wheat and a granary. And once there have been peculiar civilizations, it was fish. I never had the slightest difficulty in acquiring my share or more of money or its equivalent. A few thousand years practice and the difficulty becomes the other way. Knowing when to stop in order not to become unduly wealthy and so attract attention. For obvious reasons, I've always managed to do that. For reasons that you will see, I have never wanted power. Nor have I ever, after the first few hundred years, let people suspect that I was different from them. I even spend a few hours each night lying, thinking, pretending to sleep. But none of that is important, any more than I am important. I tell it to you only so you will understand how I know the thing that I am about to tell you. And when I tell you, it is not because I'm trying to sell you anything. It's something you can't change if you wanted to. And when you understand it, you won't want to. I'm not trying to influence you or lead you. In 4,000 lifetimes, I've been almost everything except a leader. I've avoided that. Oh, often enough, I have been a god among savages, but that was because I had to be one in order to survive. I used the powers they thought were magic only to keep a degree of order, never to lead them, never to hold them back. If I taught them to use the bow and arrow, it was because game was scarce and we were starving and my survival depended upon theirs. Seeing that the pattern was necessary, I have never disturbed it. What I tell you now will not disturb the pattern. It is this. The human race is the only immortal organism in the universe. There have been other races, and there are other races throughout the universe. But they have died away, or they will die. We charted them once, 100,000 years ago, with an instrument that detected the presence of thought. The presence of intelligence, however alien, and at whatever distance, and gave us a measure of that mind and its qualities. And 50,000 years later, that instrument was rediscovered. There were about as many races as before, but only 8 of them were ones that had been there 50,000 years ago. And each of those 8 was dying, senescent. They had passed the peak of their powers, and they were dying. They had reached the limit of their capabilities, and there is always a limit, and they had no choice but to die. Life is dynamic. It can never be static at however high or low a level and survive. That is what I am trying to tell you. So that you will never again be afraid. Only a race that destroys itself and its progress periodically, that goes back to its beginning, can survive more than, say, 60,000 years of intelligent life. In all the universe, only the human race has ever reached a high level of intelligence without reaching a high level of sanity. We are unique. We are already at least 5 times as old as any other race that has ever been. And it is because we are not sane. And man has at times had glimmerings of the fact that insanity is divine. But only at high levels of culture does he realize that he is collectively insane. That fight against it as he will always destroy himself and rise anew out of the ashes. The phoenix, the bird that periodically immolates itself upon a flaming pyre to rise newborn and live again for another millennium and again and forever, is only metaphorically a myth. It exists, and there is only one of it. You are the phoenix. Nothing will ever destroy you now that during many high civilizations your seed has been scattered on the planets of 1,000 suns and 100 galaxies there ever to repeat the pattern. The pattern that started 180,000 years ago, I think. I cannot be sure of that, for I have seen that the 20 to 30,000 years that elapse between the fall of one civilization and the rise of the next destroy all traces. In 20 to 30,000 years, memories become legends, and legends become superstitions, and even the superstitions become lost. Metals rust and corrode back into earth, while the wind, the rain, and the jungle erode and cover stone. The contours of the very continents change, and glaciers come and go, and a city of 20,000 years before is under miles of earth or miles of water, so I cannot be sure. Perhaps the first blow-up that I knew was not the first. Civilizations may have risen and fallen before my time. If so, it merely strengthens the case I put before you to say that mankind may have survived more than the 180,000 years I know of, may have lived through more than the six blow-ups that have happened since what I think to have been the first discovery of the Phoenix Pyre. But except that we scattered our seed to the stars so well that even the dying of the sun or its becoming a nova would not destroy us, the past does not matter. Lure, Tundra, Tregon, Ka, Mu, Atlantis, those are the six I have known. And they are gone as thoroughly as this one will be 20,000 years or so hence. But the human race, here or in other galaxies, will survive and will live forever. It will help your peace of mind here in this year of your current era to know that, for your minds are disturbed. Perhaps, I do know, it will help your thoughts to know that the coming atomic war, the one that will probably happen in your generation, will not be a blow-up war. It will come too soon for that, before you have developed the really destructive weapons man has had so often before. It will set you back, yes. There will be darkish ages for a century or a few centuries. Then, with the memory of what you will call World War III as a warning, man will think, as he has always thought after a mild atomic war, he will think that he has conquered his own insanity. For a while, if the pattern holds, for a while he will hold it in check. He will reach the stars again to find himself already there. Why, you'll be back on Mars within 500 years. And I'll go there, too, to see again the canals I once helped to dig. I've not been there for 80,000 years, and I'd like to see what time has done to it. And to those of us who were cut off there the last time mankind lost the space drive. Of course, they've followed the pattern, too, but the rate is not necessarily constant. We may find them at any stage in the cycle except the top. If they were at the top of the cycle, we wouldn't have to go to them. They'd come to us. Thinking, of course, as they think by now, that they are Martians. I wonder how high this time you will get. Not quite as high, I hope, as Tregon. I hope that never again is rediscovered the weapon Tregon used against her colony on Scora, which was then the fifth planet until the Tregons blew it into asteroids. Of course, that weapon would be developed only long after intergalactic travel again becomes commonplace. If I see it coming, I'll get out of the galaxy. But I'd hate to have to do that. I like Earth, and I'd like to spend the rest of my mortal lifetime on it, if it lasts that long. Possibly it won't. But the human race will last. Everywhere and forever. For it will never be sane. And only insanity is divine. Only the mad destroy themselves and all they have wrought. and only the Phoenix lives forever. Copyright 1949 by Street and Smith Publications. One of the anthologies in which Letter to a Phoenix appears is Starshine, published by Bantam Books. This is Michael Hansen, technical operation for this program by Rich Grody. Mindwebs is produced at WHA Radio, Madison.